Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, raw feeders. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. Well, it is Friday, and that is Dr. Judy Jasek Day. Hello, Dr. Jasek. How in the world are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. You gotta love Fridays.
You do.
Hopefully we don't, it's not a snowstorm Friday. Like last week we had a snowstorm on Friday.
I think we're done.
I certainly hope so. I worked so hard to save my tomato plants, and I did. I had 14 tomato plants I'd put outside the week before this last storm, and I got them through it. Somebody told me to go get buckets. I went to Home Depot and bought a bunch of little buckets to save them from the snow, because just the weight of the snow, you know, the cold was one thing, but then we're supposed to get all the snow. And so I put the buckets upside down on top of the tomato plants and then put a tarp over them. And they looked a little, you know, shaken up, but they were okay. They're alive. So
nice, nice. Are you able to grow anything more than tomatoes or just tomatoes?
Oh, no. I got other stuff too. I got some peppers that are still inside. You know, these plants, like I started them from seed. These are like my babies. I get kind of attached to my stuff.
So you're not eating them?
Well, no, because there's no actual, well, I will, the tomatoes. Yeah, I eat the actual tomatoes that the plants are gracious enough to gift to me. But yeah, they got a ways to go before they're actually making tomatoes. But I got peppers and that I'll probably put out this next weekend, as long as it looks like it's going to be consistently warm. And then I grow greens and beets and carrots and usually some zucchini and all kinds of stuff.
You are a green thumb.
Oh, I try. It's not always, it's not as easy as you think. It's not like you just throw seeds out there and they grow. You got to have the right soil and you got to water it and stuff, you know.
Imagine that.
Especially in Colorado.
Right. I know. I jumped the gun. I put out all my plants and then I had to pull them all back in. And so I've been moving plants in and out, in and out. So I think after tonight, tomorrow, we're in the clear and the plants will survive. We had no more freezing stuff.
Yeah. But how much snow did you guys get up there?
We got quite a bit. I mean, and it was heavy. I mean, we at least got 2 feet. I really did. Yeah. I mean, it was up to my shins for sure.
Yeah. I'm not surprised,
but that's good. It was good moisture. I threw down a bunch of seed, even though we can't water up here. You know, I threw down a bunch of buffalo grass seed. So hopefully maybe that'll grow. But anyway, so yeah, it's the life in the mountains, of course. And, you know, we have a lot of people that are afraid of the mountains in regards to their dogs, Dr. Jasek, you know, the rabid animals. I mean, I just see all these frothing mouth animals running through here 24/7. Come on. What the heck? I mean, what people are so afraid of rabies, and yet they'll say this, well, we don't have rabies because we vaccinate for rabies. I'm like, are you really sure that that's really true? Because, you know, when you talk to Dr. Todd Cooney, right, who said, I don't see parvo because I stopped vaccinating for parvo.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Just like if you haven't had the COVID shot, you're a lot less likely to get COVID these days.
Well, you don't. Now it's monkeypox, but we found out that it's only transmitted through sex. So let's,
So don't have sex with monkeys in your
Okay. Yeah, no monkeys. But no, I'm not real worried about the monkeypox. I'm just.
They're just creating something else for us to be afraid of. That's, it's what the conclusion I've come to is, like, everything that, you know, they're trying to make people afraid of is just, it's all fake information there. And, you know, if making people afraid is helping somebody or some organization make money, then, it's false because it isn't for the money. And it's the same in pets, same with, like, you know, the rabies vaccines and all that in pets.
Yeah. You know, so many people have these misconceptions about rabies. First of all, rabies only last 3 days in an animal and then they're dead, right? I mean, okay, there's a short window, right, that your dog's got to get in a fight and be bitten by a rabid animal in those 3 days. Now, I don't know, Dr. Jasek, I just don't see that happening very often.
No, no. And it doesn't. It doesn't. I honestly don't think there's been a case of, you know, documented rabies in a pet here in Colorado in decades, you know. And it's just not a thing. It's all made up. Or like you were saying, like, oh, or we have sightings of rabid animals. You can't diagnose rabies by sighting it. It's a brain diagnosis. The only way to definitively diagnose it is you have to actually, the animal actually has to be dead, and you have to take the brain and look at the brain. It's the only way it can definitively be diagnosed. So saying that you're diagnosing it on, you know, casual observation, that's a lie. It's a flat out lie. It's impossible.
So I was sent this by someone and they said, oh my gosh, I'm worried about, you know, rabid animals in our neighborhood, because somebody had sent out a notice that said there have been a couple of sightings. Okay. First of all, just like you said, can't diagnose it from a sighting. There have been a couple of sightings of rabid skunks in the Evergreen area and specifically in this other neighborhood. And we urge all residents to be careful and cautious with regards to their children, their pets, and themselves when confronted with animals that are acting unusually. Well, okay. I know a lot of animals that act weird. Doesn't mean that, you know, they have rabies, right? Yeah. And I always worry about this kind of stuff, because then you give someone, the powers that be, a foothold to say, well, we need to exterminate all your birds because they have the avian flu. We need to exterminate all your cats because they might have COVID. And now we got to get rid of your dogs because they got rabies.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can just see it coming. You can just see the narrative unfolding. You know, one thing comes out and you get this stuff out there in people's brains and get them afraid, and you know, and then the narrative just keeps unfolding. And once people feel like, you know, there's this fear is justified, then they'll do anything to circumvent it, even if it doesn't do any good. And let me tell you, you know, you talk about weird behavior. I have seen the rabies shot pets after they get the rabies shot completely change their personalities and in fact make dogs quite aggressive. I've actually seen this, and I was telling Dee Dee, I was communicating with a breeder, a German Shepherd breeder, and she said that she very much is animate about minimizing vaccines, but she had a dog that had a rabies at 6 months, and the dog was very dog aggressive for the rest of its life. It required an extreme amount of training just to kind of work around that. But it all came on after the rabies shot. And so, you know, if you look at, you know, the risk versus benefit. So you're going to give your dog this shot for a practically non-existent disease with a high probability, I would say more than a 50% probability, there's going to be some adverse effect from that rabies shot. And so what's the bigger risk? You want your dog to live with chronic disease or seizures or cancer or, you know, something else, or these behavioral changes that make it very hard to manage your dog? Or do you, you know, take your chances with an almost non-existent disease? You know, it doesn't make sense that, well, I guess in a way it makes sense that people be lining up for this vaccine, because nobody except people like us talk about the bad things that can happen with these vaccines. Unless, you know, people have experienced it, they're like, yeah, but I got to do it, or I got to travel. You know, I saw a couple people last week actually that were moving out of the country and came in, had to get the rabies shot. And I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't go. I just flat out, I would not sacrifice my pet. If I had to go somewhere and I couldn't get on an airplane without vaccinating my pet, then I'd put my pet in a car and go, or make other arrangements, or not move. I mean, I just wouldn't do it. I just see so much damage done from these vaccines.
You know, and here's the question. All right. So we're going to vaccinate for something that the dog doesn't have, may never have. And quite frankly, it's really hard for them to obtain the rabies.
So, right.
You know, the rabies. I'm just like, it's as if we've lost our sensical thinking, as if it just floats in the air. It doesn't float in the air, people. Rabies doesn't float in the air. And, you know, there are some people who say, well, if you get scratched by an animal that has rabies, well, how close are you or I or a or anybody going to be to an animal that has rabies? I mean, realistically.
Right. These are wild animals. You know, they don't just, you know, come up. They don't, like, skunks don't tend to run up and attack you or attack your dog. I mean, if they do, that's a sign that, yeah, they could be sick. That's one of the things they say to look out for, is if wildlife approaches you unexpectedly or something like that. But then, you know, you take precautions, you know, you keep your pet safe, you know what you have to do to not, you know, let your pet tangle with the wildlife. But like you said, the just floating out there in the air, I think a lot of people believe that about a lot of these diseases. Because I've talked to people that tell me, and this is fairly common, that they've been told to not put their puppy on the ground anywhere until they're 4 months old, except like inside their house. They take them outside their house. They should not put them down. I've seen people carrying in 4 month old golden retriever puppies because they were told not to put them on the ground because there's just diseases there that are ready to jump up and get them. But then the thing is, you're compromising their immune function by doing that, because they're not getting exposed to all these natural things in the world that they need to be exposed to in order to build a strong immune system. It's just ridiculous. It just doesn't even make any sense.
Well, we do live in a nonsensical world for certain, right? But fear, again, the biggest driving factor, and then our lack of ability to research, or we look at very limited research. You know, I was looking at whose research, Dr. Schultz, and you know, he was talking about going to the AVMAs, the conventions, with his research that says core and non-core vaccines typically have a 7 to 15 year protection rate, right? That's what he was finding, 7 to 15 years. And he said, it is really up to the individual veterinarian. The AVMA is not going to come down on them. He said, so it really, these vets could change their stance if they wanted to. And he said, I asked many, why, given this research, are you still doing 1 and 3 year vaccinations? And they said, yeah, because we want to. We're not changing a thing. And that's just, that's unbelievable. But yeah.
Well, it's a business model. It's how they make a living. It's a business model, because if they didn't do that, they'd have to figure out a way to make up for that income. And it's just too easy to just be bringing pets in and just keep shooting them full of vaccines and make a huge profit margin on it, rather than figuring out another way to make a living that's not so harmful.
Yeah. I was looking at Dr. William Faulkner, who, by the way, has a short course on rabies. If anybody's interested in taking that, it's perfectly free. But he says, you know, when your animal gets a simple rabies vaccination, the killed virus is injected straight into your animal's body, bypassing all the natural defenses, which is what you just said. And he said, here is what he has seen in his own clinical practice once dogs have had these shots. And you mentioned some of these, but he said epilepsy with seizures, laryngeal paralysis. So these senior dogs have difficult breathing later on in life. He said swallowing is impaired. There's a cough or a gag. It appears, you know, when they're eating or drinking. So he said, sorry about that. And he said hypersensitivity to noise, light, touch, aggression towards other dogs and other people. And then, of course, the ones that we talk about, the fears like thunder or fireworks. Now, I mean, why would we want to deal with that or cause our dog to have to go through that just because we want to buy into this? Oh my gosh, there might be a some rabid something that, you know, in that 3-day period is going to come in and give my dog rabies. Does not make sense, especially when you live in the city.
Right. Right. Very few, rabid skunk sightings in the city in Denver, as far as I know.
Well, you've got the three animals, fox, bats, and skunks. Mm-hmm. Okay. Most people don't deal with bats. And to get a bat to bite you, that would be a tough one, I think. Or to even bite your dog. Now, some people say, Dr. Jasek, that the saliva of a dead carcass, and if your animal sniffs, touches noses with the nose of a rabid animal, that they could get rabies. Is that true? I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it's true. I mean, the rabies, it's a neurologic virus, and the way it gets transmitted, it has to be transmitted through a bite. So yes, it's spread in the saliva, but the way it gets into another animal is that animal is bitten and that saliva is basically injected beneath the skin via the bite. So just casual, like a dog, you know, just even if a dog had a rabid animal, like a dead rabid animal in its mouth, that, you know, the virus is going to be in the GI tract. It's not injected beneath the skin, where it can get on the nerves, then it travels to the nerves, the spinal cord, and then onto the brain. They don't get it from ingesting it.
Yeah. So it is just, and you guys really have to do some good research out there and look at how did rabies even begin? How did we even come up with, oh, this is rabies? And then how did we come up with the vaccine? And, we just run amok with our fear. And what I found was so interesting about this information that just came out in my town, mind you, was that it was attached to make sure your pets are vaccinated and make sure you get your COVID vaccine.
Oh, sure. Because, you know, that's spread by the rabid animals too.
Of course. But I'm thinking, as we've described the neurological responses from getting a rabies shot, I'm thinking that a lot of these people got rabies vaxxed instead of COVID vaxxed. I don't know. Just thinking.
And a lot of the side effects are similar.
They are.
I've had a lot of cranky people lately, you know, definitely behavioral changes, neurologic symptoms. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe they just repurposed the pet rabies vaccine and called it, you know, the COVID shot.
I don't know. Did you hear about the 16 marathon runners, Boston marathon runners, 16 of them collapsed. We did have one die. All of them were vaccinated. Why do we know this? Because you had to show your vaccine information to run. And does that make any sense? I mean, that all of a sudden you have all these athletes. There's just too many blood clots, brain problems, problems with the heart. I mean, it is frightening. It would be really, really devastating if you're just any person, but an athlete who spent your entire life training and now you're damaged. You can't do it.
And you can't do it. Can't do any, I mean, and just overnight, just boom, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really, really nuts. But you guys, listen, the first step is really getting your dog on a species appropriate diet. And man, every day, Dr. Jasek, I got to get a video out that says, if your vet says to get on a prescription diet, don't call me and ask me.
Because I'm going to say no.
The question, no. Every single day, I've got vets that are saying how dangerous raw dog food is. Now, there's a new thing that's coming up, Dr. Jasek. There's a group out there, because one of my employees who's very involved in all these groups that I've told you about that I can't get involved in, but there's a group of people out there now saying that many, many dogs should not be eating beef bone, because they are seeing tons of blockages and tons of issues with bones in dogs. Now, I just got to wonder what Dr. Ian Billinghurst, who wrote the book, Give a Dog a Bone, 60% raw meaty bones, mind you. And these folks are saying, nope, dogs can't do it. They cannot eat beef bone.
Maybe it's because they've been bitten by this tick now that supposedly causes beef allergies. Did you hear about that one?
Oh my God, I know it. I'm just like, they really do not want us eating beef. What is this, a genetically modified tick? I have heard that if it bites you, then you have some sort of, you get sick from eating beef? You can't eat beef?
Some kind of allergic reaction to beef. I don't know what exactly the allergies look like, but yeah, supposedly causes beef allergy. So, you know, that tells you they're going to be doing something with the beef industry, and they don't want people buying beef anymore. They want to keep people away from the beef. So, or they're going to be selling synthetic meat or something or other, you know, there's some other agenda behind it. Cause it's ridiculous. I mean, just the whole part, like, what? I heard that, like, what? You bit by a tick and now you're allergic to meat? Like, it didn't even make any sense how that could even be remotely possible, but people will believe it. You know, they get sick once after eating, you know, something with beef in it. Oh, yep, they're true. I must've gotten bit by that tick. Now I'm allergic to beef.
You know, it's that cow tick.
People will be buying into it.
Oh my gosh.
And it'll be their dogs too. You know, so wait, we'll be getting these questions. Well, my dog can't eat beef. They probably got bit by that tick.
Oh my gosh.
You can tell them it probably got bit by that tick. So,
oh my gosh, that will send them into oblivion. I had somebody that we know who is a vegan, and trust me, we have lots of vegan in our customer base, but they were feeding their dog only vegetables. Now, here's what they said: my dog doesn't like the vegetables. So you know what we do to get them to eat the vegetables? We mix peanut butter with water and pour it on the vegetables. And I was like, I was screaming.
So how did you hear from this person? Were they interested in feeding raw?
No, they were doing some other business for us.
Oh.
And, you know, conversations and they're like, yeah, we're vegan and we feed our dog a vegan diet and blah, blah, blah. And you know, I just would like to have a camera on my face, because I'm sure that my face looks like holy tick cow or cow tick, holy cow tick. Oh my. I don't know, Dr. Jasek. I mean, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we are just dead wrong. And maybe dogs can really survive on peppers and salad. But I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Yeah. And I think the first clue is that the dog didn't want to eat it. Like, it should tell you something, because dogs love to eat. When dogs don't love to eat, you know, there's something going on. And it could be something with their digestion, or, you know, there can be lots of reasons for that. But dogs typically love to eat, and they should just be tearing into their food. And if they're not, then you really need to take a look at what you're feeding them.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And you know, I want to just touch back on this little bone thing again, really quick. We do not know what is going on with the recommendations of a veterinarian or even at home with the pet parents of how the pH may be being altered to the point that a dog cannot digest beef bones. But seriously, dogs have been eating real bone forever. And now, you know, you just got to wonder, Dr. Jasek, as they're coming down on beef, right? Oh, dogs can't digest beef bone. you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. They're making it. Yeah. They're just giving beef a bad press. Yep.
So I don't know, guys. I mean, we are just going back to the way that dogs were created to eat, cats and dogs. I see it more so, you know, cats really do need a raw based diet. They need that taurine. That's why they go for the heads, right? They're going for the head of the squirrel and the birds, and, you know, they're bringing in snakes and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Dr. Jacek and I we cannot convince you, right? We're not going to try to convince you. We're going to show you, and we're going to talk about the dangers of things that we have seen. We're going to tell you every week about the progression of chronic diseases that we see and what starts that, what aids in that. And then you have to make your own decisions. You really do. And there's so many different things that people are doing, and it all comes down to this. You got to eliminate the processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's treats, you guys, if you have a dog that has issues with sloppy poops, you cannot give them processed foods and expect that poop to get better. Okay. And I know that people will say to us all the time, nope, I'm just giving this. Well, except for this, this, and this. Okay. When you get to the point that you're just giving raw, and it is meat, bones, organ, and fat, and a proper amount of bone, and you're still having problems, then we'll dive into that a little deeper. But I would say until you're getting down to the basics and not doing any of that other stuff, you're going to expect some not so great poops and maybe some not so great digestion.
Yeah. And read the label ingredients carefully. You know, I mean, I've been an obsessive label reader for years, and I imagine you are too, Dee Dee. And some of these supplements, you know, you read and they got like 30 ingredients in them. And then a bunch of synthetic chemicals and, you know, magnesium stearate and guar gum and sorbitol. And like, what is this stuff doing in a supplement? If you're going to add anything at all in, it should be whole food only, no chemicals. You can't pronounce something on the label. You shouldn't be giving it to your pet. Or if you don't know what something is, don't give it to your pet. Cause I agree, you know, and it could be something just as basic as, what if one of those ingredients is neutralizing that stomach acid? And so their pH is coming up in their stomach, and then they can't digest their food properly. And people are spending all this money on supplements, and then they end up not being able to afford the raw because they're spending all this money on supplements that's keeping their dog from digesting their food properly. It makes no sense.
Well, and the acid reduction, right? Reducers, the acid reducers that we see being prescribed out there. You guys, if your dog is on something to reduce acid, a raw diet with bone is probably not going to be beneficial for your dog.
Right. I think they will have trouble breaking it down. The bone will sit in the stomach too long. You know, the dogs have a rapid transit GI tract. That food should hit the stomach and, you know, starts to break down in that stomach acid. And then it moves through that GI tract rapidly. I think the problems come when, you know, especially if somebody says, well, my dog, you know, vomited up bone in the morning from its meal, you know, 12 hours ago. Okay. Well, that bone should, if that bone is still in the stomach, the problem is not the bone. Problem is, why is this dog not digesting its food properly? And we don't have normal stomach motility or normal acid production, or something is amiss in that dog's ability to properly digest its food. It's not caused by the bone. It's just that the dog can't break down the bone. So I think, you know, the bone is what all automatically gets incriminated, but the bone's, you know, a little harder to break down than the other, you know, parts of the blend. And so if it's sitting in the stomach too long and all the other food is passed by, then yeah, it probably could irritate the stomach lining. But we need to look at, why is it sitting in the dog's stomach? How can we support normal digestion so that that bone moves on with the rest of the food like it should?
Exactly. You know, we've said it a million times. Our answer is going to be the same. What is going into your dog's body? But I tell you what's not a marketing scam, and that's Dr. Judy Jasek. So you want to get over to AHAvet.com. She's got an incredible team over there that can help you wade through some of the misconceptions, some of the screwy narratives. I don't know how I want to even say that. Dare I say just BS. But there is a lot of BS going on. She can help you reason. You know, sometimes people just need to bounce ideas off. You know, somebody called me today and they were asking about dental cleanings. And I said, well, if you've heard the podcast, Dr. Jasek and I have very different thoughts about dental cleanings. Mine primarily because I had a bad experience, right? But as Dr. Jasek has said, anybody that is doing their job and monitoring the oxygen levels of a dog once they're underneath, you know, under the anesthetic, they should be fine getting their teeth cleaned. I said, so it's really based on your experience. It's based on your beliefs. It's based on your research. If I hadn't had a bad experience, I probably still would be doing the deep dental cleanings. But anyway, she just said, well, I just needed, you know, and I said, so try the Bluto's Yummy Gum, you know, brush, try the Bully Sticks, try the Bones. Bones were frightening to her. And I said, if those don't work, then get your dental cleanings.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, all that stuff still helps. The home practice, that, you know, feeding raw. I mean, the best thing is, that's another big misnomer I hear all the time. Well, if my dog doesn't eat kibble, how's it going to keep its teeth clean? And I usually say, well, how do your teeth feel after you eat a cookie? Do they feel clean, or do they feel like there's a bunch of gooey crumbs stuck along your gum line? That's what happens to dogs' teeth when they eat kibble. When they eat raw, that raw meat is naturally abrasive. You know, we cook meat, humans cook meat to tenderize it. When it's raw, it's naturally abrasive. And then you add in, you know, some extra bones, some, you know, chicken feet or duck feet or chicken necks, where they got to crunch through that cartilage. That is, you know, really going to help. And, you know, I think big dogs are they're a lot less likely to get dental disease. You know, I've had Chihuahuas for 15 years and they just get so much dental. I mean, my dogs have gone in and had to have, you know, 8 teeth at a time extracted. They just get horrible dental disease no matter what, because they got these itty bitty mouths and, you know, they're just prone to it. But I think the bigger dogs eating around, you know, and like the little dogs, you know, they don't have the jaw strength to really crunch through those bones either. But I think a big dog that can really, you know, crunch through some of those, you know, the meaty bones, I think that really helps. And I think big dogs, large breed dogs, are probably way less prone to dental disease for that reason. Or just pain. You know, pain. That's one of my big reasons for promoting comprehensive dental care, is I've seen so many dogs. I think people come in, their dog's, you know, 10 years old, and like, yeah, they're just pretty lethargic. I guess they're just getting old. And I see that they have really bad teeth. And we would do a dental procedure. They take the dog and get a dental procedure, and they come back and they say, well, my dog's running around like a puppy again. I'm like, yeah, because his teeth hurt. And now you got those painful teeth out of there. And, you know, from a quality of life perspective, I think it can really make a difference. And just remember that all anesthetic is, you know, or anesthetic procedures are not created equal. I mean, I have heard it said that there is no such thing as safe anesthesia. There's safe anesthetists. So you need to make sure that you're going to a clinic where they have good monitoring. They have somebody dedicated to monitoring your pet constantly during the procedure. They have, you know, all the, you know, bells and whistles equipment that's monitoring heart rate, monitoring blood pressure. So if something changes, they can make adjustments quickly, which is really what you want. You want to be on top of things. I think what happens is the pets aren't watched closely enough. Their heart rate goes down and then they notice it and it's too late. And then they have problems bringing them back. If they're on top of it and they're doing it carefully, then I think it can definitely be done safely.
Yeah, I think there's far more success situations than there are situations like what I had experienced with my dachshund, right?
Yeah.
So that there is always that chance. There's always that chance with people. Try not to get yourself so frustrated and so scared that you do nothing, right?
Right.
That you can't make a decision. And you can always schedule an appointment with Dr. Judy Jasek's team. They can help you with nutrition. They can help you with end of life situations. They can help you with puppy situations and all types of things. So you want to get over to ahavet.com. You're still doing all the zooming around.
We're zooming so all over the place.
Yeah, you don't even have to go into her office. You know, I know you like to touch the pets, but you've been doing this for so long now that a lot of times you don't really have to put your hands on them to give an initial consultation.
Right. And most people, you know, have had their pets in elsewhere. So we have, you know, somebody has had hands on, they've been in, they've been examined, they've done lab work, you know, so I can get a lot of information that way. And we can discern an awful lot. And, you know, after you've been doing this as long as I have, there's a bit of repetition. You start to see the same sorts of cases and scenarios. So it's usually, well, some cases are hard to figure out, but a lot of them are, you know, it's pretty easy to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And beware of those cow ticks and
and beef allergies.
Right. And those beef allergies. And then they'll come the bird tick. I don't know. It's all crazy. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to The Raw Dog Food Truth. Please tell all your friends if they have issues with their dogs. Maybe they want to listen to the podcast. It's a lot of great free advice. I've gotten many emails just this week, Dr. JC, where people were saying, thank you so much for the information, and it's helped them question, it's helped them change their mind about things. So we're doing some good work out there, and we're going to continue to do that. If you have questions, send it over here to Raw Dog Food & Co., where your pet's health is our business, and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snaps.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business. Just snap.